The memories may be faint now, buried under years and layers of living. It seems like it could have been a dream, and maybe that's all it was. But somewhere, sometime, you felt it, even if it was just for a moment. What it felt like to be home. Loved, secure, carefree and silly. Powerful and brave. Maybe it was just one distant summer, or an afternoon of running through the woods at a friend's house, building forts and pretending to be kings, or visit with grandparents. The perfect summer vacation. A moment frozen in time. Or maybe it was only a dream for you. Something you never actually got to experience. But you knew was out there somewhere. The way it should be. The way it never was. No matter what home you came from, every child eventually grows up and leaves it behind, packing up dreams and ambitions and suitcase hearts. Eyes widened and the world loses its magic. Turns out that sense of security and belonging comes with age restrictions and expiration dates. And if we're honest, we've all felt this way at some point. The feeling of being afraid to start moving or stop. Of being on the outside, disconnected, like everybody else in the room belongs, but you.
All these things I've picked up on my way, I carry in this suitcase of a heart. Each word that I've heard along the way, I bury in this suitcase of a heart. You can't find me here. You can't find me here. Squatter's right. I keep this broken space. Me and this suitcase of a heart. With no address, so no one can come find me and this suitcase of a heart.
Thank you. contents are a bit different. Maybe the weight is more or less than others, but we all have it. Baggage. Things from our past that keep us from being who we are, and things that actually define where we want to not go again. We're talking about getting to a new place today. A new place where there is peace, there's joy, there's contentment, there's significance, success, oneness, regardless of what the temporary circumstances might be. A place called home. Let's pray. Father, I pray that we would begin to see what that place looks like. We would see ourselves. We would see some of the things in our past and see how it has contributed to seeing you for who you are, or actually having a skewed view of reality, a skewed sense of accomplishment in our life. Pray that the words I have will be in alignment with your heart, your character. I pray they'd be helpful. God, teach all of us, including myself, even as I speak. I pray these things according to your character. Amen. Hey, let's thank the band. Good stuff, huh? Yes. You know, there's a big piece for why all of us have memories that are difficult, or memories or things in our past that have helped us to not see reality. I want to define reality today. And today, you might not agree with everything that I say today. You might have objections with today, next week. That's okay. I just want you to open your mind and see that this actually might describe some of the reasons why we are the way we are, some of the things that you and I do, the things that we do. Because there's a through line that goes throughout the entire Bible that basically shows that all of us are born orphans. Yes, all of us are born infants. Yes, that's very true. All of us are born at a very early age. All of us are not only born infants, we're born orphans. We're born with something wrong. We're born with something that is missing. We see this in the Old Testament, the initial story. We have Adam and Eve who are interacting with one another. Everything is good all the time. They're totally one with one another and one with God, and then they do something God doesn't want, and all of a sudden the barriers go up. They start acting like orphans. Instead of loved children who are playing at home and having a great time, they start covering themselves up with fig leaves. They actually start hiding from God. It says this in Genesis chapter 3. And they heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden of the cool of the day, and the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God among the trees of the garden. But the Lord God called to the man and said to him, "Where are you?" And he said, "I heard the sound of you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself." So Adam and Eve are hiding from one another. They're now hiding from God. This is this orphan tendency of feeling like we're on our own. It's all about us, and if you actually find out who I am, it's going to actually be worse for me. This is actually where all relational hell breaks loose in the Bible. From this point on, stuff just goes bad. Their relationship is gone bad. Their relationship with God is harmed. They have kids, and their kids are constantly competing with one another. When one succeeds, the other feels like a failure. And so actually, out of jealousy, the one kid kills the other one. Death happens. Then this child is driven away from the Garden of Eden, away from their parents. They never see him again. And as we see story after story of brokenness and relational tension coming to where human beings actually are doing amazing accomplishments, having amazing success, building a massive tower. And they say, "We're so awesome. We're doing exactly what God would do. Amazing stuff." And their successes are getting in the way of them and God. We've all heard of ADD, right? ADHD. There's a different ADD. It's an actual diagnosis. Attachment deficit disorder. Not attention deficit disorder. That's one thing. But also attachment deficit disorder. Orphans have a hard time attaching to people. I interact with people all the time who've adopted and brought someone into a home, and it's hard when you're an orphan, when you've been felt, when you feel like you've been abandoned, to actually attach. It's hard for us to attach with God. It's hard for us to attach with others. And we think that the reason why we have problems, or the reason we don't feel good, is something like, this is very popular today, if I'm not feeling good about where I am, it's not that I'm having a hard time attaching to God or attaching to others, it's that I'm not reaching my fullest potential. So we keep thinking, if I just achieve more and do more, I'll feel good about myself. To me, more in a moment, actually, of spiritual sobriety, I believe, opened up a bit about her life in Harper's Magazine not too long ago. Here's what she says. She says, "I used to think that what scared me was the idea of being abandoned until someone said to me, Only children can be abandoned. Adults can't be abandoned because we have a choice. Children don't have a choice. So I started to rethink, okay, it's not that. What's the underlying threat that really scares me? I think what scares me is not having the courage to reach my full potential. Boy, let me tell you something. If Demi Moore's problem is that she hasn't reached her full potential, we're all screwed, every last one of us. Honestly, come on. She's not feeling good because she hasn't reached her full. What would full potential look like for her? I mean, it's hard to get better looking than her, right? I mean, seriously, if she doesn't feel she reached her full potential and she looks the way she, I'm sorry, we're all messed up. How about money? My goodness. Unbelievable amounts of bank. Unbelievable. If she hasn't reached her full potential, man, none of us will. Notoriety, publicity, fame, relational, can I virtually have any person she wants to hang out with? Gosh, no, Demi Moore. It's not that you haven't reached your full potential, and you're my problem is not that we haven't had the pop psychological nirvana of achieving the golden dream. No. It is that we do feel like we're about to be abandoned. That's how orphans feel. We do feel like we're only one failure away from people not like us. We do feel like we're totally on our own. This is the way orphans feel. A dominant theme throughout the entire Bible is one of this orphanhood, or one of slavery, one of abandonment, one of distance from God, distance from others. We see in the Old Testament, the dominant story is the story of the nation of Israel who is in bondage. They're in slavery to the nation of Egypt. And one from among them, Moses, is actually abandoned. His mother wants to give him a better life. She puts him in a basket and floats him down the street. He is abandoned and he gets scooped up into the house of Pharaoh, the ruling house that has the nation of Israel in bondage. Here's what it says. When the child grew older, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses because he was drawn out of the water. And I really identify with this because I've been orphaned twice. The Bible speaks very clearly that all of us, when we are born orphans. We are born with a disconnect with God. We were born with a disconnect with other people. I was born a spiritual orphan, and I was born a physical orphan. I was adopted not too long after birth, but nonetheless, in both realms, I can identify with this. And Moses is adopted. He becomes a son in Pharaoh's household. And then what he does, he brings the whole nation of Israel from a place of slavery, of orphanhood, of detachment, of being abandoned, to a place of home, what's called in the Bible as the promised land. The promised land. My main goal today is to help us see some of the bad news about our life. I want us to see the bad news. I want us to see the natural condition that we're in. And I want to do that in part by giving you some of my story, helping you see some of the baggage that I have and how I've been able to connect this with outages in myself and being in a different place with God. All of us have stuff in the trunk. All of us do. Let me share a couple things I have. Because all of these things that you have in your trunk are characteristics of what an orphan is like. Pine Box Derby. Anyone else ever doing Pine Box Derby? Yeah. The father-son thing that we did, my dad, and first time I did Pine Box Derby, you get a little chunk of pine, and you kind of carve it out, whittle it away, and then you paint it up. Mine was not too unlike this one. And I remember spending the day painting it up, and my dad coming home from work, he's a nuclear engineer, pretty meticulous guy. He took a look at all my work he'd done. He said, okay, Brian, let me just touch it up. And he took the paints, and he worked over for about a half an hour, and by the time he was done with it, I couldn't even recognize it anymore. He just touched it up. And this was where I had the first memory of having a hard time receiving feedback. Orphans don't like receiving feedback. Now, there is such a thing as encouraging feedback, but really feedback tends to be screeching like a microphone in an amplifier. When someone tells you something that you don't like, that you're not doing, no matter how nice they say it, it's hard. It's difficult. It's hard not to take it personally. And this is the first time I can identify having that piece of feedback and not taking it well, not liking it. I've given a lot of messages here at Crossroads over the last 16 years. Hundreds. And then if you multiply each one by how many times I've done it, like five times this weekend, I mean, I don't know, in the thousands or something like that. So hundreds. And I found out there's a very predictable equation that tells you whether or not it was a good message or a good sermon. Okay, a few things. First of all, it's got to be interesting, right? It doesn't matter if it's a message or a lecture in college. It's got to be interesting. Got to have a little bit of humor in there, right? Yeah, those are just givens, no matter what it is. It's got to be interesting. And then here are the big ones. It's got to be something you agree with, and it has to be something that affirms what you're doing now. If you can have those four things, you have a good sermon. You have a good message. But if you're in an environment like this and someone tells you something you disagree with, or even worse, something that you're not doing, that's feedback. That's stuff that we don't like. I still am in difficult this way. Man, someone sends me feedback, whether it's email or letter. Here's what I do. Here's how twisted I am. I'll scan the whole thing. I'll immediately go to the bottom and see who wrote it, so I can figure out if I can categorize them as a positive or negative person if I know them. Then I'll read the last two sentences to see if it ends well. Then I'll skim the whole thing and see, is this a nice letter or is this a bad letter? It makes me feel good about me. And then no matter what, I'll read the whole thing, but I've just sort of tensed myself up to be able to be in a posture to receive it. We're all like this. We're all, you might say, I'm not like this. Have you ever heard anything in an environment like this that you didn't like? Man, last week I talked about parenting. Whew, my word. Wow. I mean, I don't know how many times I said, hey, here's some applications that I've done in my family. Try it to see if it works for you. My goodness. The blowback was crazy, 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 crazy. Unsolicited parenting advice is something nobody wants. Nobody wants. I mean, no, you're not able to say, well, interesting how it worked for you. Your kids look pretty grounded. No, it's just, and it doesn't bother me so much because I understand this is the way that we are. Orphans don't like when someone tells you there's something that should be improved. Something isn't good enough. It's natural. It's normal. All of us are this way. Every last one of us. Another thing that I had in my bathroom is a little Old Spice. Got my Old Spice. I can't whistle as high as I used to. I'm not sure why that is. Yeah, got my little Old Spice here. Yes. God, love it. You know, Old Spice not only is functional for me on a day-by-day basis, but is a memory of mine because I remember during Christmas, wrapped and in my stocking, I would get Old Spice. I would get Old Spice deodorants. When you're a little kid, you're like, oh, good, because you just like unwrapping it. Like, oh, Old Spice, thanks, Mom, thanks, Dad, wonderful. But then as time goes on and you're 8 and you open up your Old Spice again and you open up a new toothbrush and you open up dental floss, you go, wait a minute here. I think Mom and Dad are trying to balance the family budget. That's what I think they're trying to do. And all of a sudden it starts to bother you. And I think if I look back, this is the first time when I can identify that I didn't feel that I was worthy of a gift. Orphans have a hard time getting gifts. We have a hard time seeing God as generous. We view God as cheap, or we view God as unworthy. And I started to view God as cheap. Like any authority figures, I can work for it, or I can earn it, or maybe you can loan it to me, but an actual gift that's extravagant, amazing, I didn't see that in my parents at that point, and I didn't see that in God. And still to this day, it's difficult. Now, before I go any further, I got to be very, very clear with you. My parents were great parents, and here's what I am not saying. I am not saying that Old Spice jacked up my view of God. I am not saying that my dad's painting on the soapbox derby was the thing that made me have a hard time with you. I'm not saying that at all. This is not pop psychology time, because here's what pop psychology says. Or not even pop. Some studies in psychology would say you go to the psychiatrist, you go to the therapist, and he sits back and strokes his beard, goes, smokes his pipe. I don't do that anymore. They probably should. But they just kind of stroke their beard, and they say, so, tell me about your childhood. And you're supposed to talk about your childhood, and he's listening and hoping he finds something out, and he says, tell me about swing sets. And so you give this story of what happened to you, and all of a sudden something is unlocked, and you understand why you are the way you are. Hear me very clearly. These things did not make me an orphan. The Bible is very clear that the seeds of orphanhood, the seeds of being distant, the seeds of believing that God is not a great giver and I'm unworthy, the seeds of not being able to take feedback because I take it personally, all of those seeds are in all of us at birth. And then, based on the conditions that you're in, well, these things my parents did, it was just the water and the light and the fertilizer to make these things come to fruit. That's all it was. In fact, some of us, I talk about these things, you go, I don't think about that one. Okay, you just haven't had the right light and water and fertilizer yet. You just haven't had. All these seeds are there, and then it comes to bear, and we realize, oh man, something is broken. Something is not right with me. The book of Ephesians chapter 2 clearly spells out, along with a bunch of other verses in the Bible, that this is reality. This is all of our personal reality. Here's what it says. And you were dead in your trespasses and sins. What were we in terms of impressing God? Dead. Not okay, 50-50, dead. Dead. In which you once walked, following the course of this world. Who's doing it? Everybody. That's the course of the world. The world puts us towards orphanhood, puts us towards thinking it's all about myself, puts us towards thinking if I succeed, then I'm going to be able to feel good about me. It's the course of this world. Following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, among whom we all, who all, who we, who, you, me, all, we all once lived in the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and the mind, and were by nature, not by nature, not by what our dad did with us with the Pinebok Derby, by nature, children of wrath, like the rest of mankind. Who? The rest. Who? Everybody. Who? Mankind. Anyone who is a kind of man or woman. All. If you identify with any of these things I'm talking about, some of them you might not identify with at all, but if you identify with any, you are what's called normal. I'm sorry to tell you, you are average. You are average. You are right in the mean, because this is the default mode of all of us. Let me see, what else do I have in here? Oh, this is one of my degrees, real degrees. Not one of these freaking kindergarten degrees. What is this? You go to kindergarten, you get graduation ceremony and degree. Are you kidding me? That's what's wrong with America. Hey, graduated from sixth grade. Oh, no, you didn't. Time to go to seventh grade. But this is one of my degrees. Yes, I do have an edumacation. I do. I have three real degrees. I have a high school degree. I have a college degree, and then I have a master's degree. Let me read you the certificate from my master's. It's a three-year degree I have. It says this. This hereby certifies that Brian Douglas Tome, having completed the prescribed course of study and having satisfied all other requirements, is granted this diploma with the degree Master of... Oh, let's just stop there. Master. That's right. That's what I have. What kind of degree? I have a degree of being a master. Like, who are you? Master. Just call me master because I have mastered it. I got it done. And what specifically? A Master of Divinity. That's right. I have a degree called the MDiv, the three-year degree. I have a Master of Divinity. You might have a MBA, master business, whatever. You know what I master? I master the divine. That's what I master. If it has anything to do with the divine or the transcendent, guess who's the master? Me, because it says so right here. My ideas, my thoughts, awesomeness, yes. You know, I actually, the worst time in my life, my relationship with God, is probably halfway through seminary, because I was getting so much knowledge and feeling so good about myself. I felt like I had all the answers. And of course, if your answer is different from mine, then you were just plain dead wrong. Not only were you wrong, but you didn't know God. Not only did you not know God, he probably didn't even like you. This is very common. Very common with orphans. We have an inability to love others who are different than us. Inability to love others who are different from us. In seminary, man, I cannot believe how much time was spent debunking and coming against people who had different views on secondary things in the Bible. What do I mean about secondary things? I mean things like Christians have differed with for a long time. Who should be baptized? What's the mode of baptism? How does the world end? What's the end times look like? I mean, all these things. And I just came to view that if you didn't interpret these verses the way I did, man, you were obviously outside of relationship with God. You obviously were not getting it. That's the way many of us are. Maybe you haven't had seminary, but you have a hard time differing with people, loving people who differ with you sexually, have a hard time loving people who differ with you politically. How about that one? Here's what happens, right? You go down your neighborhood and you see somebody with a political sign that's different than the one you have in your front yard, and do you look at that person and go, interesting. Gosh, you know, they seem like a pretty grounded person. They're my neighborhood. I had to have a conversation with them to see where they're coming from, because they might be able to enlighten me a bit. And that'd be a fascinating conversation. Would you do that? No. You go, what a loser, how stupid they are. How dumb can you, what an idiot. idiots. They differ politically and you can't love them. Automatically, you go to the worst. All of us do this. It's the normal human, it's what orphans do. We're jealous of others. We want to be right. If you have something that's different, we have to somehow put you down. It's a normal, normal deal. Other things that I have is, yes. This is a magazine that comes to pastors, maybe every pastor in America, a lot of them. It's called Outreach Magazine, and this specific magazine is the holy grail of all issues. This is what I refer to as pastor porn right here. This is pastor porn. This issue has the 100 largest and fasting growing churches, the top 100. You know, the top 100, it's not like the top 100 of the churches who honor God the most. It's not the top 100 who praise the most. No, it's all numbers, top 100. And it's dirty. It's a dirty pleasure of mine. Every time this comes, I go, oh, I'll look. Absolutely, I will look. So I take a look at this, and I'd say this porn is amazing. I mean, it's got amazing articles in it, and it's even got a centerfold. It is unbelievable. Oh, my goodness. Yes, it even has a centerfold, 1 to 100 of every rank. This is the largest. Not only that, it's not just the largest. Size does matter. It's not just the largest. It's also the fastest growing. Oh, man, yes. Crossroads is on both of these lists. And I swear, yes. I tell you what else. I know some of these people who are ahead of us, they lied about their numbers. They lied. No question. They lied. God will deal with them. He will. They lied. I look at these things, and you know, it's weird. It's an odd thing as you look at. You constantly compare yourself, and actually, you feel good about your performance or bad about your performance based on other people. This is normal for orphans. It doesn't matter what you do, what you have. If you see somebody else who identifies who has more than you or has different than you, you feel like a loser. You feel like a turd, or you feel like they somehow are bending the rules, they're doing something wrong. Performance, success, all these things with orphans always is a difficult, rough thing to actually wrestle with. How are you like that? Do you feel like it's your most recent credit card or your most recent report card that defines you? How about your performance and your investments? You know, how does that make you feel? How about your performance? How about your kids? You look at your kids versus other people's kids. How about your performance? Whatever it is. I mean, it's always the most recent thing. It's not the sum of the whole. It's not what God says about our performance. We're going to talk a bit over the journey. It's not how God has performed for me. God does perform for us. It's how I perform for myself, and that defines whether I'm a good person, whether I'm a successful person, and even whether God likes me. This is why oftentimes we have failures. We have a disconnect with God because we can't stomach our failures. So we think, obviously, God doesn't like us if I've just failed. Orphans are like this all the time. Our success, our joy, is dependent on the most recent performance. What else do I have in here? Yeah. My motorcycle jacket. Jacket I put on regularly when I come over here. When I drive here to work, drive here to Crossroads, I put this sucker on. When I put it on when I'm just coming to work or something, I just put it on and go, it's all good. But it's interesting, when I put this jacket on with all the armor, everything else, when I do a multi-day trip, whether it is a couple days in the hills of Kentucky or whether it is to Alaska and back, when I put this thing on right before I put my leg over the motorcycle to leave, I almost always have this thought that goes, oh no, I could wreck this time. Oh no, I think I'm going to wreck. I have a sense that I'm going to wreck or someone I love is going to be maimed or die on this trip. Every time it happens. And the Bible says to take every thought captive. So what happens is when you have a thought, it could be God is speaking to you. That's part of how God talks to us is through thoughts. So it could be. And so what that means you do is you grab that thought, you take it captive, you bring it down, and you examine that thought. You think, okay, where's this thought come from? Does it line up with anything else that God for sure said, which is in the Bible? I measure it against that, and I try to discern this. And every time I have that feeling, that sick, sick feeling, the verse I go to in the Bible is the book of 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7, it says this, "For God gave us a spirit, not a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and self-control." This says that whenever you have a fearful moment, don't worry about it, God's not talking to you. God does not give us spirits of fear. power, love, self-control. And every time I realize, oh, no, this is just my orphan tendency to be afraid that I'm on my own, God's going to abandon me. Actually, only one time have I not had this fear, and that's the one time I wrecked. Weird, went through a deer going 85 miles an hour. Good times. Yes, good times. This is huge for us. This is massive. I'm telling you what, orphans just feel that fears are normal and healthy. Fears are normal and healthy. Of course, you might be wise to say, oh, I don't have fears. I just have concerns. Oh, no, I'm not a fearful person. I'm a conservative person. No, I'm not a fearful person. I'm just a realist. That's all I am. We have all these weird. No. America is not the land of the free. America is the land of the fear. We're the most fearful nation in the entire history of the world. That's now been documented. 1 in 5 Americans, 40 million Americans, suffer from an anxiety disorder, a certifiable anxiety disorder. The World Health Organization did a worldwide survey and ranked the most fear-based countries from 1 to nothing. And guess what? America is still number 1 in fear. We're the most fearful nation in the entire world. You know what number 2 is? The number 2 most fearful nation in the whole world is Colombia. Now, people who know me will generally call me fearless. And I am going to someday ride my motorcycle to the tip of South America. And every motorcyclist knows that as you go down there, the one country you don't go through is Colombia. You actually put it on a boat and sail around Colombia and then put it back in dock. Why? Because you go through Colombia, drug cartels, you are going to get robbed and raped likely. It's not a good time. Not good. Honestly, the fears are justifiable. And yet, we have more fears than Colombians. You can live in Colombia and have less fears than the average American. How crazy is that? Crazy. If there's anything you fear, economy's going to, I better bury gold in my backyard. I've been hearing people talking about burying gold in their backyard since I was 15. Maybe someday it'll happen. Who knows? But I tell you what, it hasn't happened yet, and we will always find something to be fearful of. Oh, no, she's going to do this. Oh, no, that's going to, I fell bump. Oh, it's cancer. I know. We're always finding and thinking of something. Oh, God's going to abandon me. God doesn't care about me. This is what fear does. Fear comes when someone feels like they're an orphan. It's all about them, and we are just an object of random circumstances because there isn't a father. There isn't a loving heavenly father that actually cares and actually intercedes for us. Another one, last one I'll share with you. I got tons of them. This is all I have time for. This is one, my little league glove. Come on, let's go. He can swing. Yes, a little league stuff. I played little league, and when I was 9, I was 9. One of my most painful memories was in the dugout and being made fun of. Now, this was a bit unusual because I was one of the quasi-cool kids when I was 9. I was a half-decent athlete, so I wasn't the target of the traditional bullying. But something happened this day where someone called me a name. It was a name that was offensive to me, and they started picking on me, having fun with me. And then somehow they brought my dad into it, were making fun of my dad. It was just a really dark, really weird thing. And I was so unprepared for this. It was something that had never happened to me before, and I didn't know how to cope with it at all. I mean, I didn't even know, like, gosh, I should just punch one of these kids in the face right now. It would end. I was so overwhelmed that I just started crying and sobbing. It was like an ugly, ugly sob. Like I'd never cried before and never cried since. And as I cried and sobbed, I didn't even know how to interpret that. I didn't know how to handle it. It made me feel that much more weird, and I cried harder and worse. And finally, the parents found out what was happening. They came over, and they were trying to figure things out. And the most painful thing about that for me was not that I cried publicly. The most painful thing was these are people who I thought I could trust. These were actually friends of mine. And the seed that was watered at that moment was a message, don't bond with others. Orphans have a hard time bonding with others. It's difficult. It's difficult to do. You might say, gosh, I don't have a hard time bonding with people. Okay, best friend, who's your best friend? If your best friend is in another city, you have a hard time bonding with others. You have a hard time going, what? No, it's just a time. Okay, who around you are you opening your life up with? Orphans will say, I don't have a hard time bonding with others. I'm just sort of an introvert. No, introvert, extrovert, that's not what I'm talking about here. Orphans have a hard time putting themselves in dependent relationships on others. That's why our divorce rate is as high as it is. We have a hard time even bonding with someone who we've been a spouse with. When I go back to my high school reunions, because I've come home, there's something that God's done to me in the last few years, and I go to my high school reunions, people look at me and say, I don't even know you. Girls I dated in high school said, I could never get you to talk. You never talked. It was a form of not bonding, not feeling like I could trust, not bonding. All these things I'm talking about, they're normal and they happen because it's a spiritual truth. We can all identify with them. We can identify with the awful thing that happened in Michigan. You heard about this with Whitney Kropp. She was nominated to homecoming court, and she felt good about herself until someone clued her in that she was the nerd and geek. No one liked her, and it was all a prank. And the town went ballistic. Of course, the news media has gone ballistic. All of us, we hear about a girl that's made fun of publicly like that. People are toying with her, and our heart goes out, and people are buying her dresses, buying her carnations. Why do we all universally feel that's awful? Because spiritually, it taps into our orphan identity, our sense that we're abandoned, our sense that we're on our own, our sense that we don't measure up, our sense that somebody else is hurting us. Universally, we feel this way because it's a universal truth all of us have had. And I'm telling you, this reason is why many of us are not going to get into small groups. I'm telling you, if you want to grow to the extreme degree, you must get in a small group this journey. And many of us will not because of our orphan tendency of not willing to bond with somebody. It's a vulnerable thing to get with somebody for 6 weeks, open up your life, actually talk, but it's a necessary thing. And what makes it even worse, I can't even guarantee you you're going to have a good small group. I can't. Your car might be broken, your transmission might be mangled, and I can't guarantee the mechanic that you take it to will fix it well and for a good price. I can't guarantee you that. Your marriage might be at the point of total brokenness, total desperation, you can't break through, and I can't guarantee you that the marriage therapist that you choose is going to get you to a new place. But here's what I can guarantee you. I can guarantee you that if you don't get the car to the mechanic, you have no hope of the transmission being fixed. I can guarantee you, if you don't get to the marriage counselor, your marriage will not be the way it was supposed to be. I promise you that. And I can promise you, if you don't get to a small group, I can promise you, you will not come to a place where God wants that. Promise you. I'm pulling on any trick I can to just help you. Say, man, come on, I want the best for you. I want you to get to the promised land. I want you to get to a place called home, and it's going to take a bit of work. It's going to take a bit of struggle, not just kind of sitting in a dark room and hearing nice, fun stories. It's going to take a struggle, just as the nation of Israel had to struggle to get to a place that was new. John 1:12 says this, but to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. So you can become a child of God if God gives you the rights. Who are not born, not of blood, nor of the will. So it's not something you decide in and of yourself. It's not a natural situation, but something that God does, nor the will of man, but of God. Being adopted into his family, having a home, 8:14-15. For all who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God or daughters of God. For you did not receive the spirit of slavery, likening themselves to the nation of Israel, slavery, to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons, by whom we cry, Abba, Father. Do you know God as Daddy? You feel so close to him, you can't bum him out, and you can call him Daddy. You know, when I was younger, I was in church environments, and people were always, oh, heavenly being of the Most High, we beseech thee to come unto thine thither peopleth and loveth us. We are mere small ants in thine presence, O holy Father. Yes, we are a mere ant in God's presence. Yes, he is holy and high. Yes, 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 yes. Looking back on it, also was a masking of orphanhood, of feeling like unworthiness, feeling like God could not. The word Abba in the original language is actually better likened to Daddy. Daddy. To feel so close with your heavenly Daddy, you can call him Daddy, to feel affirmed and content, whether you are succeeding or failing right now, you have a place of home. We're going to take a look at one person who's bold enough to be vulnerable and share his story. As we take a look at his story, we're also going to have the opportunity to give, be generous. If you're newer today, no worries. We know it's going to take you a while to trust us. For those of us who've been around for any length of time, you know that we pour a lot of jack into your spiritual growth. We never sell anything. We spent scads of money on all these things, all of the books you've given, IT infrastructure, staff. Our growth is expensive, and that's how we fuel this. So we have the opportunity to be generous, whether it's in a bag that goes by or going, doing your giving electronically like our family does at crossroads.net. But whatever that is, let's just have the opportunity to be generous. That's where you are, and let's take out one person's bold story.
My father was very much alive, but just not present in my life pretty much at all growing up. It's hard to understand, you know, what your functioning is without a model. And I'd really never seen growing up, you know, a successful marriage. I'd really never seen, you know, a father up close. And I certainly had never been fathered either. So, you know, the culture I grew up in is an extremely performance-based culture. Extremely, you know, very professional. And it definitely was drilled into me growing up that I am what my degrees say I am, or what my job says I am. I used to be Mr. walking through the dealership, give me the most expensive one you have in here, here's cash or some portion of it, and give it to me right now. And yes, upcharge me all of the extra options because I deserve it. It made me feel like I was the man. Yeah, I can do this, you know, treat me with respect. You know, this is a symbol of some sort of success I thought I was achieving, you know. And while we're at it, give me one for my wife, too. And, that, you know, that really used to be, you know, my mentality. I read a book on parenting. And it was a very specific, really good book about, you know, what to do, what not to do. And halfway through the book, as I'm reading it, this, you know, cry kind of welled up in me. And, you know, the cry was essentially, you know, wow, my father did not do this for me. And, you know, I just broke down right then and there. I mean, I just cried all over the book and the pages and everything. What's really interesting to me about that is that he's actually, I didn't realize it until I just kind of looked back at it. But he was still teaching me Abba Father as I was being that for my children. I can't tell you the number of times I've just looked at things I've said or behavior I've exhibited, and I've just marveled at it. And I'm not, you know, not at me, because I know it didn't come from me, but I'm like, man, where did that come from? Where did that insight come from? Where did that kindness come from? You know, where did that, you know, where did that affection in that moment come from? You know, I look at, I've got really, really great kids, And I have often, you know, as I've looked at Solomon and thought about, you know, how it would, you know, so impact him if I walked away from him, you know, and it just breaks me down because, you know, I was that same sensitive kid. You know, and I often wonder how I survived, honestly. How did I survive as a young kid and a young man? But even then, God was Father, although I didn't understand it at the time, because he certainly preserved me. You know, this is going to ruin my reputation as a tough guy, which is crying on the thing, man. Interesting, too. One of the things I know that was done is I know that I've been able to disconnect what my father, my natural father, didn't do from what God desires to do. I have made that disconnection. Well, number one, it fundamentally changes how I see myself, right? My place in the world, my place in him, which is critical because it impacts the kinds of decisions that I make, right? Which impact, you know, my family right away and their futures and our legacy together. I'm very confident now that there are certain kinds of choices that I used to make that I won't make anymore because those choices were tied to how I saw myself. I don't chase money anymore, right? I don't do that. I don't, you know, opportunities to go and make blah, 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 you know, come up a lot, you know. But I'm very circumspect about what I get involved with professionally. And I ask different questions. Like, is this good for my family? Is this what God wants me to do? How is this going to impact my marriage? How is this going to impact my household? Is this going to cause me to spend a bunch of time away from the children? You know, those are very different questions than what I used to ask. You know, the kinds of questions I used to ask, you know, was, you know, how much money is this going to be? You know, can I get a new car? Can I buy another house? Can I, you know, those types of things. I realize that at 42, I got another 35, 40 years on the planet maybe. And it is important to me to, you know, do the things which are going to last. You know, finish raising my children well. You know, be married to my wonderful wife well. And leave, you know, a godly mark on this planet. For me, everything I just named that I want to do and do well is, it utterly depends upon God's grace, His mercy, His strengthening me and Him being, you know, daddy to me.
Good stuff. The hope of home is real. Last big idea, very quickly. The hope of home is real. And be very clear, we're not talking about going back to home. We're not talking about the way to get back to the way things were. Some of us have really good memories in our family of origin. Some of us don't. We're not talking about going back. The nation of Israel was not trying to go back. They're trying to go to the promised land, the place they had never been. In and of our natural tendencies, we are not where we are. There's a place God must bring us. There's a place we must go. There's a journey we must take to home, to the center of His heart, to having His identity course through our veins, to having contentment and joy that transcends our certain circumstances, that being in the promised land. In the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 8, 7 to 10, their promised land is described. It says this, "For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs flowing out in the valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive trees and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills you can dig copper. And you shall eat and be full, and you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land He has given you." I'm telling you, there's a promised land. I've been there. I am there. I keep taking detours out of it. I keep taking detours away from my identity as a loved child. I keep taking detours away from a place of home, of contentment and joy and success and significance, regardless of Excel spreadsheet results. I'm telling you, it is amazing. Now, some of these things we don't necessarily identify with, like hills you can dig copper. That doesn't mean a lot to us. Maybe there's some different descriptors God might use that speaks to our heart today. Maybe He might say, "And you shall eat and be full, and you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land He has given you, a land of lake houses with canoes and rope swings. You can go home."
Hold on to me as we go, as we roll down this unfamiliar road, and although this wave is stringing us along, just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home.
You can always be found. Just know you.
you know, in terms of standing and singing, there wasn't a lot of participation today, but there's a lot of participation today. Maybe you were able to get some ideas down on page 12. Maybe you were participating in going back in your memory banks and thinking, oh, this could mean that. Maybe you're already starting to think through who you're going to be in a small group if you're not in one yet. Hey, it's not too late. It is not too late. It's my final push. Get on the website, crossroads.net. Maybe you can find somebody electronically. Maybe you'll find somebody at the Connect event. Maybe you're going to get out of here. You're going to start doing texts and calling somebody. Hey, were you at service again? Are you in a small group? You want to start one? No, I wasn't. Hey, go online, crossroads.net. Why don't you watch the service, and let's try to do it. Do whatever you can. Do whatever you can to take advantage of an opportunity that rarely comes by that many people do not have. Want the best of you. Want the best for you. Want you to get home. Want you to come to a place of hope and resiliency and significance and contentment and joy. It only comes when you break out of the norm, break out of the average. So, hey, the journey has begun. We'll see you later. Bye now.